From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last Wednesday when a writer decided to take a stand and defend the newspaper industry, but it probably wasn't who you expected to be praising the New York Times and the Washington Post. This writer was Kevin Williamson, a conservative writer for a very conservative publication, National Review Online. Williamson explained that he has written for the Times and the Post and Politico. He's a subscriber as well, and he's kind of grown tired of hearing his fellow conservatives respond to stories they don't like with some variation of, well, you know, it's just a newspaper. They're all liberal rags. It's probably fake news anyway. So Williamson wrote a piece titled, How to Read the Newspaper, and he wrote, quote, here's a little secret for you. Newspapers, like all the works of men, are imperfect things, and the nation's newspaper editors and television news producers are very much at fault for the low general level of trust in the media, but they do not traffic wholesale in fiction. All of the cries of fake news in the world are not going to change that. We cannot simply retreat into tribalism every time we read something in the newspaper that displeases us. We owe it to ourselves to take account of reality, and we owe it to the country, too. It is cheap, it is cowardly, and it is bad citizenship to simply shriek fake news every time reality forces a hard choice upon us. Living in a free, self-governing society means making a great many hard choices, and there is no one to make them but us. End quote. Well, last night, you probably heard that a reporter for The Guardian, Ben Jacobs, appears to have been assaulted by the Republican candidate for an open congressional seat in Montana, Greg Gianforte. Gianforte put out a statement blaming the reporter, and now a number of conservative commentators are debating whether this alleged assault is the inevitable result when a president refers to journalists as the enemy. Well, here to discuss all of this are a couple of journalists who I assure you are not the enemy. Megan McDermott, I don't think. Nice to see you back here.
On a good day, I'm not the enemy.
Yes, nice to have you. Thank you for being here, Megan. And Justin Murphy from the Democrat and Chronicle as well. Hello, Justin.
Hey, Evan.
We have the audio of what happened with Gianforte. We're going to get to that in a second. But I guess I don't know where to start other than to ask both of you if you have ever felt physically threatened in the way we're about to hear with that audio. Have you ever felt physically threatened, Justin?
No. I'm sure we're going to get to this, but this is an extraordinary situation. I mean, the thing that happened last night, and kind of in general, the fake news accusations phenomenon. I mean, Megan's been a reporter for longer than I have, but I've never not only has that never happened to me, I've never even heard of that happening.
Okay, you ever felt threatened?
I've never felt threatened by a source, particularly a government source. Sometimes crime scenes will get a little dicey where the crowds are a little wild, and then you'll feel a little nervous because sometimes people will turn on the media there, but not in the same context as what happened to Ben Jacobs last night.
I actually, producer Megan Mack grabbed the audio for us, and it's been shared in a lot of places, but I don't know who to properly cite as a source for this. So she's going to send me a note on that, but let's listen. This is the actual audio. So again, the situation is you've got this open congressional seat election today, today, right, guys? I think it's today.
It is today.
And you know, so a number of people have been covering it, and Ben Jacobs from The Guardian was there. He's been covering this for weeks now. And of course, you've got the Congressional Budget Office score of the AHCA, the American Healthcare Act, coming out. So that is certainly something to ask candidates about. Gianforte has been supporting the healthcare reform proposals. And so this is audio that does come from The Guardian. This is the audio of the altercation in which the reporter claims he was body slammed. Gianforte claims that it's a different story. Let's listen to the audio first, then we'll get the varying accounts.
And what you thought
we'll talk
it.
To you about that later.
Yeah, but there's not going to be time. I'm just curious if you
okay,
have the
speak
right
with
now.
Shane, please.
But you
don't.
I'm sick and tired of you guys. The last
Jesus
time you came here, you did the same thing.
Get the hell out of here.
Jesus.
Get the hell out of here. The last guy did the same thing. You were the Guardian?
Yes, and you just broke my glasses.
You the last guy did the same damn thing.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Get the hell out of here.
You'd like me to get the hell out of here, I'd also like to call the police. Can I get you guys' names?
Hey, you gotta leave.
He just body slammed me.
You gotta leave.
That's reporter Ben Jacobs' voice there. And so that's the audio of the altercation. Now, here is the Republican candidate's statement on what happened from Gianforte. Quote, tonight, as Greg was giving a separate interview in a private office, The Guardian's Ben Jacobs entered the office without permission, aggressively shoved a recorder in Greg's face, and began asking badgering questions. The reporter was asked to leave. After asking Jacobs to lower the recorder, Jacobs declined. Greg then attempted to grab the phone that was pushed in his face. Jacobs grabbed Greg's wrist and spun away from Greg, pushing them both to the ground. It's unfortunate that this aggressive behavior from a liberal journalist created this scene at our campaign volunteer barbecue. End quote. Now, you've got the candidate blaming the reporter and denying that it was a sort of a body slam, etc. Well, you heard Ben Jacobs at one point saying, "Can I get your names?" There were three other reporters in the room who witnessed it. One of them was a Fox News reporter named Alicia Acuna, who eventually wrote her own statement, and I want to read from her statement of what happened. Quote, "During that conversation that we were having, another man, who we now know as Ben Jacobs of The Guardian, walked into the room with a voice recorder, put it up to Gianforte's face, and began asking if he had a response to the newly released Congressional Budget Office report on the American Health Care Act. Gianforte told him he would get to him later. Jacobs persisted with his question. Gianforte told him to talk to his press guy, Shane Scanlon. At that point, Gianforte grabbed Jacobs by the neck with both hands and slammed him into the ground behind him. The three reporters, Faith, Keith, and I, watched in disbelief as Gianforte then began punching the reporter. As Gianforte moved on top of Jacobs, he began yelling something to the effect of, 'I'm sick and tired of this.' Jacobs scrambled to his knees and said something about his glasses being broken. He asked Faith, Keith, and myself for our names. In shock, we did not answer. Jacobs then said he wanted the police called and went to leave. Gianforte looked at the three of us and then repeatedly apologized. At that point, I told him and Scanlon, who was now present, that we needed a moment. The men then left. To be clear, at no point did any of us who witnessed this assault see Jacobs show any form of physical aggression toward the candidate, who left the area after giving statements to local sheriff's deputies." End quote. So it certainly sounds like Gianforte's statement is a lie or a serious misrepresentation of what happened. And it sounds like what Ben Jacobs, the reporter, is saying is the accurate one, that he was slammed to the ground. And in fact, it sounds to me like the Fox News reporter's statement paints an even more grim picture than the reporter, Ben Jacobs, did. And you hear the audio again. Let's listen one more time. And now listen to how calm the reporter was in this situation. I want to ask our guests after we hear this if they think they could have remained this calm in that situation. Let's listen.
And what we'll talk to you about that later.
Yeah, but there's not going to be time. I'm just curious if you have
to speak
right
with
now.
Shane, please.
But you don't.
I'm sick and tired of you guys. The last time you came here, you did the same thing. Get the hell out of here. Get the hell out of here. The last guy did the same thing. You were the Guardian?
Yes, and you just broke my glasses.
The last guy did the same damn thing.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Get the hell out of here.
You'd like me to get the hot up here, I'd also like to call the police. Can I get you guys' names?
Hey, you gotta leave.
He just body slammed me.
You gotta leave.
All right, Megan, could you have remained that calm? I mean, I find that remarkable.
And I really have no idea. And it sounded like a completely unsolicited attack. And I don't know how I'd behave in that situation. Kind of thinking back, people sometimes do have get a little bit angry. And I did have a man once accost me outside of a hearing in Brockport one night and start screaming at me at the top of my lungs about what a terrible reporter I was and how, you know, he couldn't believe the coverage that I gave of this story. And I didn't necessarily feel physically threatened because there were so many people around, but the way that I reacted to that then was I asked him who he was, and then he wouldn't give me his name, so I just started taking pictures of him in case anything did happen in the future. But I don't know how I would react if someone actually put their hands on me.
Hmm. Justin?
The kind of situation that Megan described is, I mean, you can see that kind of happening. There's the angry townsfolk, and you maybe wrote something that they didn't like. But this is a candidate for the United States Congress.
And he's going to win today, by the way. Very likely, he's still going to win.
The thing that struck at me the most, and what I think we'll talk about today when we're talking about fake news, is he put out that statement saying, among other things, that he asked the guy to lower the recorder, which he didn't. This false statement, and he knows for a fact that the guy is audio recording it. That's the whole point of the altercation. And he knows that there are three other, impartial witnesses to the event. And he still felt, he and his communication person, whatever, didn't feel that there would be any repercussions to them putting out something that very quickly would be proven false. And that's kind of where we're at in general, is a person can put out something that's false and it doesn't matter.
Well, now you've got kind of this debate that's going on among some commentators, and especially among conservative commentators. You have Joe Scarborough, former Republican congressman who now is on MSNBC. You have Matthew Dowd, former chief strategist for the George W. Bush campaign team, who left the George W. Bush team in 2007. And I think he calls himself a conservative leading independent working for ABC News. They've both said today that this is the inevitable outcome when you have a president who refers to journalists as the enemy, not saying, you know, I wish journalists would cover it this way or I don't think they're fair, but saying that journalists are the enemy. You got Dowd, you got Scarborough, you got others saying this is the inevitable result, that physical violence is probably where this goes. Whereas you have, you know, some other conservative commentators, Molly Hemingway for The Federalist, among others, saying that's insane. You cannot blame Donald Trump for this. But I'm wondering if you feel the atmosphere, Megan, I mean, do you feel the atmosphere toward journalists, not necessarily in Rochester, but everywhere, has it changed?
I think it has. I don't know that I'd necessarily blame the Trump administration, but more the proliferation of alternative news sites, maybe, yeah, where people are able to pick and choose the truth that they want. You know, they'd rather pick something and read it and believe it, as long as it aligns with their pre-existing thoughts. And then anything else that sort of would contradict that, they want to reject. And there's a lot of anger in that. They feel as though, people seem to feel as though what journalists are doing is picking on people that they like or institutions that they like. And I do see much more anger in general.
Justin?
It isn't something that I've experienced personally. And I think this is like maybe the most important distinction that I try to draw for people when we talk about this is that there are worlds of difference between what Megan and I do. And for one thing, what this guy covering the congressional race, you know, we cover political races sometimes, but when you start talking about the Russian probe and having anonymous sources in the CIA, that it's an entirely different ball game. And I think, you know, like I'm the school reporter, I go to a lot of school board meetings. Megan reports on bridges a lot. It's hard to, first of all,
don't minimize your colleague's work.
I'm not minimizing it, but I can tell you that it's hard to generate fake news about a bridge.
Absolutely.
And there's no Bridges of Monroe County blog
book
somewhere in the dark corners of the internet where someone's peddling theories about the bridge.
I thought you were referring to Bridges of Madison County.
That would have been clever. But the point is, we're some of that. The way things go back and forth, we're insulated from because of the scope on which we work. And I think that is a challenge in the larger conversation. Because even this piece that you sent, which was very interesting, the way that the guy gives his journalistic bona fides is he says, well, I worked for the New York Times and the Washington Post and Politico. And that even by itself, which is the way that we usually talk about these kinds of conversations, has very little to do with the vast majority of journalists in the United States working for local radio, local TV.
But I still hear from some listeners of this program that, you know, pick an organization, XXI, the Democrat and Chronicle. Well, that's liberal. You know, anything in the media that's sort of mainstream is considered by some to be discountable because of some perceived liberal bent. And what Kevin Williamson, a conservative writer, is saying is that we have to get back, even now, yes, conservatives, we have to get back, he's saying, even now, to saying, if it shows up in the news, our first instinct should not be to try to discredit it reflexively just because of where it is printed. And I think that's an important point to be making right now. I'm going to get back to that in a second. Let me just, because I was asking, you know, how maybe Megan and Justin have seen things evolve or change when it comes to the disposition toward journalists. A couple of other points on that subject. Conservative strategist Rick Wilson had this to say on Twitter to his fellow conservatives who are, some are celebrating Gianforte's attack on a reporter. And, you know, look, on Twitter you can find people celebrating any vile thing. But Gianforte is saying this, quote, if this is where you are, celebrating this kind of thing, you're not a party, you're a mob. If this is where you are, you're not a conservative, you are trash. The problem with political violence is twofold. First, it accelerates. And second, the set of acceptable targets widens, end quote. What Wilson is saying is this is an important moment for everybody to stand up and say what Gianforte did is not acceptable. I don't care if you don't like the media or you think the media is liberal. It is not okay to physically assault somebody, because if we condone it in any way, if we just say, well, look, the media's gotten too liberal, so they got what's coming to them, who's the next target and how serious is the next assault? Do you agree with that, Megan?
I think that I do. You know, you can't excuse this kind of behavior coming from anybody. And, you know, look at what happened, and I can't remember her name right now, but what had happened earlier with the reporter who had been grabbed by Corey Lewandowski. You know, that's sort of one incident. You have this other incident here, and things do tend to accelerate, and people feed on that, and I think that's a dangerous tipping point.
Justin?
Yeah, the mob analogy is not wrong, and I will say that if I had been at one of those Trump rallies where they put all the reporters in the little pen and he kind of jeered at them, I would have been terrified. That's not funny.
I was at the Trump rally that was here, and during the first part of that, I wandered through the crowd getting comments from people, and they were sometimes, the initial reaction was hostility when I said who I was and what I was with, and, you know, the accusations of, you know, being from some liberal rag, or, you know, we don't need to, you know, newspapers are dying and it's a good thing because you're all liberals anyway. And it was, unfortunately, I wasn't able to be inside when it started because I was outside covering the protesters. But as people were coming out too, they were sort of jeering at the press who was outside, and someone who driving by on Scottsville Road spit at me. And I don't know if that was because I was standing with the TV cameras or they thought I was a protester.
Wow. Well, Dave Weigel of the Washington Post on Twitter this morning said, let's pump the brakes here. Let's not assume that, quote, everyone in the heartland or everyone in red state America is cheering this attack on a reporter. That it's uncharitable and unfair to those voters and those citizens to assume that they're all cheering this, and that even if they think the media is liberal, that they would condone a physical attack on the media. Weigel's saying that's a bridge too far. Let's not make that assumption. My response to that is, I hope he's right. I hope he's absolutely right. And especially, listeners, I'd love to hear from you, in particular, if you are a Trump voter or a Trump supporter. You know, how do you feel about what happened in Montana? How do you feel about what Megan was describing, you know, sort of penning up reporters and directing the crowd to kind of turn and jeer at them? And, you know, are we reaching this dangerous moment in American journalism? It's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I agree with Weigel if he's got a point. And I think he's probably right, that it's uncharitable to assume that these large populations of people would cheer this kind of attack. I'm just a little nervous about it. I'd like to see the president asked about it, see what he says. I hope he condemns it wholeheartedly, because he had endorsed this candidate for Congress. But that does make me nervous. In response to how things have changed when it comes to how we respond to news, this is from Kevin Williamson's piece in the National Review. Quote, not long ago, when I would inform someone that they had passed along an internet hoax or an erroneous claim, writers on public affairs spend a fair amount of their correspondence thus engaged, the response would be a sheepish, oops. About once a week, someone will inform me that Hillary Rodham Clinton was disbarred for misconduct. She wasn't. Or that Barack Obama's mother-in-law is receiving a six-figure federal pension for having babysat his children. She isn't. Or some other such nonsense. And then cry, fake news, when they're corrected. The irony is that they have fallen for fake news, and they retreat into fake news when you point out their gullibility. So Williamson is saying that's how things have changed now. Do you agree with that, Justin?
Yeah, and that is something that I've noticed. I think a increased willingness from people to push back on a set of facts that you've gathered on legitimate reporting that you've done, not saying, well, actually, I have a different account here, or I have different information, just saying I don't believe you, and that's a very tricky thing. And I think, honestly, I'm not sure if it's limited to journalists. I think you could get a panel of college professors or pastors or experts in any field who will tell you that there's that same shift in the balance of how much are we going to trust the person just because, in general, they have been trustworthy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let me grab our first phone call. And it's John and Victor first up. Go ahead, John.
Hi. I've never been to a press conference, so I'm just calling to ask if anybody has seen a reporter try to provoke an angry response from a politician in particular.
Do reporters try to provoke a response in a certain emotional way? That's what you're wondering?
Yeah.
It's a fair question. My first answer, and then I'll let our panelists jump in, is I'm sure it has happened. But does it happen with any frequency among professional journalists? I certainly don't think so. I mean, Megan, what do you think?
I think that would be unprofessional behavior if you're trying to get, you know, the person that you're talking to angry deliberately. You're actually trying to get them to answer a question. And sometimes that can get heated. People don't always want to answer the questions that you have for them. But to deliberately try to gotcha with a question that's sort of out of the blue or designed to provoke a response, sure, it does happen, but it's not something I necessarily condone.
Well, and I wonder if John might be saying, suggesting that maybe this reporter was trying to egg on the candidate in order to have something like this happen and then make him look bad, and that's kind of like his end game. In general, I think what maybe people don't realize, you see the Sean Spicer press conferences on TV, but generally speaking, interactions between reporters and anyone are not public events. So even if you were to do that, even if, you know, when we go into Congresswoman Slaughter's office and talk to her, even if we were to get a rise out of her somehow, there's no audience for it.
Okay. John, you want to follow up there?
No, not really. It was really just sort of an open-ended question. I'm not sure that I heard anything in the recording that suggested that Jacobs was trying to do that. I was just curious about it because, you know, The Guardian is definitely a left-leaning publication, and the congressman or the candidate did mention you guys in the context of, are you from The Guardian, right? So it seems like there might have been another report from The Guardian in before. I mean, I'm just wondering if there's some other context here.
John, thank you for that. The reporter in question, Ben Jacobs, has been covering Gianforte's race for Congress for weeks now, and he's written some things that Gianforte has not liked. But, you know, when it comes to that altercation, at least what we hear in the audio, it is much more closely aligned with what the reporter is saying than what the candidate is saying. And I say that because what Jacobs is saying is, look, we got the CBO score. It's the day before the election. This candidate has supported the AHCA. You've got a CBO score that really matters here in terms of context of policy. And the candidate was saying, you know, well, go talk to my press guy. I'm doing this barbecue. I'm not going to talk to you about this. And Jacobs basically made a decision. Okay, I'm going to turn my recorder on, and yeah, I'm going to kind of stick it in his face here because this is my one chance to get a little bit of a response before he kicks me out of his office, and I'm going to ask him the question because it's important. And he's not going to be willing to answer it maybe, or he wants me gone, but I've got to ask it. And that's a little persistent. Some would call that rude, but what Jacobs is saying is that's the only shot I got to get an answer here, Justin.
And I think in a general sense, that's what people, our readers and TV watchers, that's what they want journalists to do. That's the point of being a journalist. You know, you kind of like brag about it on the commercials or whatever. We're going to ask the tough questions. We're going to hold our elected officials accountable. I guess you can debate the propriety of how aggressively he shoved the microphone in his face, that kind of thing. And you don't want to get into the like 2020 ambushing people with your camera sort of tactics, but if we never insisted upon people answering questions, we wouldn't get very far on questions that they don't want to answer.
Certainly. That's our job, is to be persistent. And sometimes perhaps it can come across a little rude as you're trying to get someone to answer. But
and to get back to John's point, it would never occur to me that I could provoke a member of Congress or a candidate for Congress to physically attack me. Even
But even if it's not a physical attack, Justin, maybe John's saying, are you going to try to get an emotional response or get him to yell or get him, you know, to do something that would make him look bad? And I don't think John is saying Jacobs did that here, but he's wondering, do journalists do that?
Yeah.
I think there's different kinds of journalism, but straight journalism where you're trying to hold people accountable, no, that's not really... That's not the point at all.
And we'll get back to your phone calls in a second. Lest anybody think that this is too partisan, let me give you a little preview of what's coming up next week. And I'll tell you, the least accessible person to cover in this state is probably the governor. Andrew Cuomo, I think, has a very poor record with the press. I don't think he answers questions unless it's a very controlled setting. Certainly he's never come on this program, rarely does much with media. You know, he didn't really want to do debates, even though it turns out when he debates, he seems just fine. I don't really understand his fear or concern of it. But it has been a very closed administration, and I think, as a journalist, a very disappointing term in office for this governor when it comes to just simply talking to reporters and talking to the public. And next week on Wednesday, we're doing this broadcast, Connections, and we invite you to join us at the Little Theater live with a live audience. And come on down. There's no cost to do it. We'd love to have you in the audience. It's with Karen DeWitt, our Capitol Bureau correspondent. The first hour is Karen being Karen, and she's awesome. You're going to love her stories, her experience, her covering the Capitol and state business for years. And then the second hour, Karen's going to be joined by Brian Kolb, who's a Republican, the leader of the Republicans in the Assembly. And we're hoping Joe Morelli, but if not Joe Morelli, another Democrat from the Assembly. So be there for that. But what you're going to hear is some audio that Karen has of her interaction with a Democrat in the state Senate, Jeff Klein, who's the leader of the IDC in the Senate, and how rude he can be and how rude he was to her just last week when she was asking good, important questions about complex matters. I am getting a little tired of office holders or candidates, you know, treating journalists like, well, you know, we don't have to answer questions of the public. Don't run for office if you don't want to do this. I mean, Greg Gianforte, you don't have to do this. He's a wealthy guy. I don't understand. You're going to be asked about the CBO score. How are you not ready for this? It's very strange to me. But anyway, this is I'm just trying to say this is not a partisan thing, at least not on my end. And I certainly don't believe on Megan and Justin's end, despite, again, what some people in the public might say.
Oh, absolutely not. I've dealt with mostly local government officials from all parties, and some are fantastic about answering questions, talking to the media. Others won't take my phone calls or don't answer my questions at all. And some have gotten irritated with me in the past, and it doesn't stick within any particular party line.
Well, let's get our only break of the hour, and we'll come back to your phone calls. And we'll start with someone who thinks that the media deserves the criticism from the president. We'll talk about that and a lot more with two journalists that I respect very, very highly, Megan McDermott and Justin Murphy from the Democrat and Chronicle. If you want to check out the piece that kind of sparked this discussion, by the way, well before the Gianforte incident in Montana last night, it's by Kevin Williamson in the National Review, How to Read a Newspaper. And you ought to check it out. I think from a conservative writer, a very interesting perspective. We'll be right back here. Coming up in our second hour, why would a guy, a retiree who doesn't even ride bicycles, spend 10 years distributing more than 50,000 bicycles to people in Rochester who need them? It's the amazing story of Dan Lill and Our Community Bikes. You'll hear it next hour, and it's a preview of the upcoming Western New York Bike Festival. Talk to you next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Keith in Rochester, next on the phone. Go ahead, Keith.
Yes, you're spending way too much of this precious time navel-gazing your own personnel, like with a reporter in Montana. What about the really true breaking stories of the past day where the Obama administration unmasking phone calls and the Pfizer courts going after Obama? This is the problem, is that you never took Obama on, but you're always going after Trump. Trump said in a vernacular way that you're criminals because in a human way he was lashing out that 93% of the stories against him are to the negative. And also, why isn't the New York Times being held responsible for printing those graphic pictures from the Manchester explosion? These are the stories that people want to know about. You're just grousing because the only correct thing you've said is that, unlike when I grew up and only had the three networks, now we have alternative means of getting our news, and you and the establishment media don't like that, and you are navel-gazing. Get over it, and let's get some even stories across the board, including the one that I mentioned about Obama administration unmasking the calls going against the Pfizer court rulings. You're very uneven in your coverage, and Trump, in a human way, was only lashing out because you know you want to put him out of office. Why don't you give Trump the grace that you gave Obama, all of you in the liberal media? You never went after Obama the way that you're going after Trump and trying to get him impeached.
Keith, thank you for the phone call. First of all, be graceful to earn grace, I would say to this president. But I would say, in regards to Keith's point, Keith is making a fair point about the Obama administration and unlawful monitoring of citizens. I think that's a very legitimate story. But Keith, I mean, I've said right here on these airwaves, and I think, you know, the Columbia Journalism Review, a lot of people would assume that must be liberal. It's academic. It's a media and academia. That's like a liberal double whammy to some people. Columbia Journalism Review has been merciless in saying that the Obama administration is way overrated for press freedom, that they did a very poor job in responding to freedom of information requests, and that they set a poor standard for dealing with the press. And I think that those are all fair criticisms. So, Keith, I'm not trying to ignore the FISA story. That's not something I would cover personally, and I think Justin and Megan would not, but I don't think we're ignoring that. I take your point in that way. Look, I don't think many politicians, Democrat or Republican, do a good job of responding to freedom of information requests. Do you guys think that, you know, does either party do better? I think they do terrible.
I think in general, the lower you are to the ground, the better they are. But also sometimes the lower you are, it's terrible, like in the little villages.
It depends. You know, I had a particularly banner bad week for FOIL requests last week where, one, I had asked for something in a specific format. I asked for a spreadsheet, and they sent me a PDF, which is essentially a picture of the spreadsheet that I had asked for. And then in another request, I was told by a state agency it was going to take 9 to 12 months to fulfill my request, which was basically for something that would really be just photocopying the contents of a particular folder of not that many pages.
And as you said, the Governor Cuomo, it's been terrible. I mean, you can't get anything.
And
out
Keith,
of this
he's
state.
A Democrat, by the way, so you know.
The Governor Cuomo, not me.
Yeah, no. The governor is still a Democrat.
But, you know, so this is, as I said earlier, this is the point I would like to make. We can have a lot of debates about how the president gets covered. The stuff with Russia is either the worst thing in the world or no big cause for concern, depending on your point of view. But when we're talking about people in Rochester or in whatever their own community is, and they want to be informed about their own community, which is really the basis of your civic engagement, we don't do that. Again, I go to school board meetings. Megan writes about taxes. We don't do that. We don't make decisions about unmasking in the Obama administration or Trump's emoluments problems or anything like that. So when we talk about restoring faith in newspapers and in the media, I think it would be very helpful for people to have some distance there and say, just because CNN is doing something or the New York Times citing anonymous sources, whatever, that's above my pay grade. I'm covering school board meetings. So whether we
And thank goodness you are, by the way.
That's right. So whether or not we agree on the direction of the Trump coverage, let's all agree that it's a good thing to be informed on your property taxes and your school board and your local hospitals and courts and whatever else. And that is, at least we can agree, a legitimate thing that's happening.
Not only legitimate, but vital.
Mm-hmm.
We get to a world where there are no newspapers. Local TV news is not going to be going to city council meetings, is not going to be digging through records, not going to be covering bridges and repair and how your tax dollars are spent in the same way. It just doesn't happen. So I think Justin's making a very important point right there. Let me go back to your phone calls. Carlo in Union Springs next. Go ahead, Carlo.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I don't know if we're surprised at this. I have seen from the right wing a incredible amount of sort of what I would call phony machismo. Back from the beginning when Obama got elected, the Tea Party displayed blatantly racist images of him and his wife. The Republicans said nothing because they need these people. They can't condone it, but they can't do anything about it. And, you know, you lie shouted at a joint session of Congress. Things like this that keep accruing, and they're not addressed. Sarah Palin staged this thing where she shot a moose that got flushed out of the woods. We had Michelle Bachmann said, "We're coming to Congress armed and dangerous." Okay, I'm sorry. That's unacceptable for people in government. And they're going after this fringe because they need that fringe. So, and I'm not saying all Republicans are like that.
They're not.
No, and I have plenty of friends, and I know my an uncle and this and that, people that were conservative, but we could talk about things, and I felt like we were in the same game. I don't think it's like that now. And this idea that it's fake news is just off the tracks. Also, the Republicans, what did they do at the beginning of the primaries when some of the stuff that Trump did, some of the disrespect he showed people? I remember at one rally, a protester said something. He said, get him out. I wish he was here. I'd like to hit him. You know, I mean, did we have collective amnesia when he got elected? I'm sorry. And people who talk about why they didn't go after Obama, you're talking about things on two different levels, as far as I'm concerned. And there is, and it goes back, look at Ronald Reagan, who a lot of people adore. He's talked about the welfare queen in Harlem with the five kids and the five fathers. It's the same message to white working people who are being screwed over. Your problems are because of this group and this group and this group. And they continue to do that. So I know I'm kind of all over the place here, but I'm talking about a narrative of hate and resentment and ignorance that's just keeps going forward. And, you know, this guy in Montana was one little, you know, pimple on the back of a person with a total breakdown of his circulatory system. That's how I would call it. It's a incredible thing. So anyway, I'm gone. I'll listen.
Carlo, thank you for that. I mean, look, I know you wanted to unload and vent a little bit on how you see these things stitching together. My bigger concern is whether we are going to see violence beget more violence. And the answer is I certainly hope not. Carlo is seeing a narrative where, you know, some of the rhetoric that goes back decades starts to have that kind of appeal to it. And I just hope that that is wrong. You know, Keith wanted to say, well, where was the grace towards Trump that was showed toward Obama? Certainly, you can debate how presidents or administrations or politicians in different parties are covered. But there's no debating whether one of these presidents was more graceful to all Americans and the media more than others. I mean, that's just not really up for debate. And the question is, are we going to get more violence out of it? I certainly hope not. Anything you guys want to add to that before you go ahead, Justin?
Yeah. I wouldn't be concerned about an epidemic of violence against journalists. I mean, that becomes a criminal matter. And I think that it's fair to say that almost anybody we interview, and probably actually anybody we interview, has no intentions of physically harming us. I guess what my concern would be more as the tenor shifts and more people are inherently distrustful of journalists, that there will be less pushback on the kind of nuts and bolts stuff that we depend on. There's not going to be energy to push the governor of New York or the federal government to open up information in ways that would make it more helpful for us to share that public information with people. When politicians choose not to make themselves accessible to answer questions about things that people need to know, if people, I mean, you know, we squawk about that as much as we can, but if there are not other people alongside us saying, hey, those journalists are performing an important service to me, you know, we need you to provide whatever it is that they need. If we don't have that, then it becomes much more difficult to do the job.
Sure. The greater issue is an epidemic of violence against the truth. You know, in order to function properly, a democracy needs a free press that is able to get to the bottom of things. And if people are choosing their own realities or choosing to reject the truth or reject the work that journalists do simply because it doesn't agree with their own worldview, I don't know where that leaves us as a nation, you know, if we can't all agree on at least some kind of shared reality.
All right, let me get back to your phone calls. Bruce and Irondequoit next. Go ahead, Bruce.
Unfortunately, we have a long history in our country of politicians attacking newspapers and newspaper people. Even recently, a congressman during a live TV interview almost pushed the guy over a second floor or third floor railing in Congress. But I think the problem is when you had your first caller on there, you heard the vehemence. Why are they not doing this? And it's like, well, wait a second. I watched the news. They talked about that. And they said, oh, you believe it's true? Show the evidence. And they kept on looking in the evidence. So to say, oh, they don't do anything about it, it's the evidence that's proven it wrong, and that's not the answer they want to hear. This has been investigated, continuing to be investigated. It's not in the news, and what you said before about Trump. It's like, yes, you have to earn the respect. You don't just get it. And the things, it isn't because it's Trump. It's the things he's done. The relationship with Russia, firing Comey, and, you know, one of his people supporting and actively advertising for his daughter's, you know, clothing wear. They just don't want to hear it. And I don't think there's a way to fix it. And I think that group of people is happy that this guy got attacked. Yeah, we gave it to him. And I don't see a way that we're going to be able to get that group ever.
Okay, well, Bruce, we're about to find out here. I appreciate the phone call. I want to turn to our next caller, who I know is concerned about what he perceives as liberal bias in media. But I also want to hear, and John, you're going to have plenty of time to say whatever you want to say, but I want to know how you feel about what we heard from Gianforte in Montana last night. Was that an appropriate incident, John?
Hi, Evan. Hi, Justin. Hey, Megan. You know, I didn't hear what he said. I read a little bit about it, so I can't comment on it, I guess.
Is it? I'll clear the floor for you because I know you got a lot you want to say, John. But what it certainly appears, based on the audio and based on the Fox News reporter who published a statement as a witness, is that a candidate for Congress did not like that a reporter from The Guardian was asking him questions, asked him to stop. The reporter said he was not going to stop asking questions, and the candidate responded by grabbing him around the neck with both hands, slamming him to the ground, punching him in the face, and breaking his glasses. Is that okay under any circumstances?
No, it's not.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that should be a very clear baseline, and I'm glad to hear that.
And he's been charged. I guess he's been charged.
Yeah, I think misdemeanor assault was the initial charge that we
yes.
heard. But, you know, we'll see where that goes. Okay, so what else do you want to add? Go ahead, John.
Well, I guess I just wanted to comment on, yeah, I think there's a tremendous bias in the media. And I have to say, Justin and Megan, I think, are on the better side of that. I think... I'm very critical of USA Today reporters on national issues, but I think our local reporters are much less biased. But I got to say, on a number of issues, especially recently with the Black Lives Matter protests we had, I think it was last summer, I thought the DNC coverage was very biased in giving Black Lives, really glorified Black Lives Matter. I think they were, in that case, they were beyond the scope of legality as far as taking over the streets in that march. I remember I was part of a march, Tea Party march, back in maybe three, four, well, it's been longer than that now. That group got permits and whatever. We marched down Main Street with permits. We got to City Hall. There were some speeches done. And people wanted to march on to the federal building. But the people in the audience says, no, we don't have a permit to do that. So the Black Lives Matter, as an example, was out of control. And the DNC seems to sympathize with that type of movement. The other thing, going back to that, the Monroe County Hospital incident, I can't even think of the director of that hospital. He ended up being fired or was or quit because of his treatment of one of the patients there, who the patient himself was out of control. The Democrat and Chronicle blew this thing out of proportion and put this guy in jeopardy, and eventually he lost his job. That was very unfair coverage. I'll give you a personal example that I had. I went to a county, Monroe County budget hearing. Now, this is going back a while. I think Maggie Brooks may have just gotten in the office. And I was speaking out at the public hearing against the Republican budget. And I had a lot of different ideas, and I just thought they were spending too much money. And I have to say, when I looked at the audience, the Democrats were on one side, the Republicans were on the other, and the Republicans, they were not smiling. They had very sort of angry looks on their face because I was kind of putting down their budget. Well, the Democrats were smiling. They loved it. So afterwards, I was interviewed by one of the TV stations, and the reporter, the first thing he says to me, man, it's great that finally somebody's going to speak out against the Republicans. And I thought, you know, and I'm not a Republican, but I thought, you know, to me, that showed bias. That reporter wanted to go after the Republicans.
All right, John, I got to jump in. First of all, if what you're saying is true, and now we are into years ago stories of what you remember a local television news reporter saying, if a reporter did say, it's nice to hear someone go after the Republicans, yes, that is biased, and that is a problem, and that should not happen. And if that's a true story, John, and I'm not trying to doubt you, I'm sorry that to hear that. I would be very surprised to hear that, but if that happened, that's a problem. Yeah, that's bias. In regards to the Democrat and Chronicle, I think it's important to say one thing. Based on what I've read, and maybe our guests can correct me, I think the editorial position is more supportive of Black Lives Matter as a movement. The news department covers it. There's a difference. And sometimes, again, the Democrat and Chronicle and many newspapers, sometimes people will read opinion pieces and say, well, your paper does this. And I know we've talked about that on the show, but I think that does make it harder for journalists like Megan and Justin at times. Do you, Justin?
Yeah, that's very difficult. But you know what? I mean, John makes a good point. At any level of journalism that you're doing, you end up having to make very difficult decisions about how to frame things. And the Black Lives Matter is a perfect example. You know, John's right. They were obstructing traffic, committing any number of
technical violations, right?
And that's true. I think that the way in our news coverage and probably in the editorial, we chose to frame it on a higher level of what are they protesting against, and is that a valid concern? And on that, we try not to take a stance one way or another, but aside from the fact that they're blocking traffic, what are they talking about, and is that or is that not a legitimate concern in our society? And we got a lot of criticism both ways. And that doesn't bother us, by the way. I think that that's maybe an important point to raise, is when people call us, as they do almost every day, and say, you didn't cover this properly, you missed this, how do you not know that? That doesn't bother us. That helps us, I think, toward a truer way to cover things that are important to all of us.
If someone calls in and they have a criticism and it's valid, you want to take that and use it going forward and take a look at the coverage that you've done and see if you've missed something or if you've missed an important perspective that should be out there. And criticism is a good thing. There's nothing wrong with criticizing the job that the media does, because Lord knows we deserve it sometimes. You know, and I'm happy to take criticism when it's founded and, you know, has some merit to it.
Absolutely. And we want our readers and listeners to be critical of the work we're doing and to push us to do better. And here's Carly with, I think, an email that helps us put a bow on the hour. She says, it's important to point out the importance of thorough analysis and inquiry in journalism, especially in the example of the ongoing Bill Nojay scandal, information brought to us by highly motivated DNC staff. Would your guest comment on the service of the journalist in this case and how journalism can help keep government honest if that's possible?
I mean, that was the work that Gary Craig and Steve Orr did on that case was remarkable. And I think it's not only, so people kind of often speculate, well, if there weren't reporters, then we would just kind of find out about it elsewhere. And that's a case where, no, you wouldn't have. Bill Nojay would have died and we all would have kind of assumed that
everyone would move on.
A tough re-election, and maybe he was sick of it. And it was only through the incredible sourcing and reporting of very experienced reporters that came to light, and we started having a much different discussion. And if Bill Nojay had been alive, he wouldn't have liked that very much.
Agree, Megan?
Absolutely.
Well, let me just close with this point then, because we opened the hour with the Kevin Williamson piece in the National Review Online. He's a conservative writer appealing to fellow conservatives, but I think the point is to anybody who sees a news story, sees a story in the Democrat and Chronicle or the New York Times or the Washington Post, whatever your political bent, and if you reflexively say, well, I don't like this, but it came from X, so I'm not going to believe it. Kevin Williamson is saying to his fellow conservatives, and I think to all of us, there is something toxic in that. That journalists are, by and large, everybody's flawed people, and we all make mistakes, but journalists are producing actual news, working very, very hard. And I think Justin and Megan have pointed out, even on the local level, you get more granular. You certainly don't want that to become an endangered species any more than it is because of the work they're doing. So, and it's largely apolitical. And I just want to thank them for their work. And thanks for all the great calls and interaction. Megan McDermott, thank you for being here. Always great to have you.
Always a pleasure.
And Justin Murphy, see you in the Democrat and Chronicle. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
All right, short break. Much more Connections next.